Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to remind you all, it's that time of the year for our annual WEAA Members Only Appreciation Holiday Party. Thursday, December 1st, that's tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Black Olive in Baltimore, at the Inn at the Black Olive in Baltimore. Enjoy a complimentary cuisine, special live broadcast performance featuring Marshall Booz and the MC Booz Band. You must be a current WEAA member to attend. Space is limited. Time is short. So call 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075 to reserve your space at this great party. The special event is brought to you by the Black Olive and Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And speaking of voices of the community, my guest in the second part of our show today is the Reverend Heber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, who blogs at faithinactiononline.com and wrote this blog that came to our attention the other day seems to be taking on the Baltimore Development Corporation. And more. So, Heber, welcome. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you so much, Mark, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
410-319-8888 is the number here. So, the thesis basically is you spoke at, they had a meeting with Baltimore Development Corporation where you spoke out.
That's right. There's a group called the Another BDC is Possible, which is an offshoot of the Occupy Baltimore group, and, and they organized and pulled together this open-air meeting with Jay Brody, the head of the Baltimore Development Corporation. It was right there outside of his offices, and it was, a wonderful display of folks getting involved in the process and getting in the way of the process when the process is not sensitive to the people.
Now, I thought it was very rare that Jay Brody would actually do an open meeting like that, so
yeah,
you got to appreciate that a little bit that he did that.
Definitely,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
But when you say... What is it they're not doing? What is the vision? Who's being left out of the process?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think some of the people that this group invited to come speak are people being left out. They invited folks like the United Workers to come and speak, and these are, by and large, low-wage workers who, what is the chances of them having to sit down with with Jay Brody? To speak on their concerns and legislation that they're working on together. I mean, it was a wonderful thing. And for my piece, I wanted to help give voice, not that I can speak for the entire Black community, but to help give voice to the conversations that I've been hearing for years about the problems with this city, particularly, you know, the problems as they are spoken about in Black circles and barbershops, churches, and beauty salons in the Black community. And for me to sit there to help to share that message and give that message to Jay Brody, I thought was very important. And also it was for people who, as I was sitting there speaking to Jay Brody, I was listening to the MTA buses ride behind my head because it was right there on the street. And so as I was speaking to him, in my mind, I was thinking about the people on the bus who were riding by, people who oftentimes probably are washing the windows downtown or changing trash cans and, you know, who smile and get by, but the wages aren't really what they needed to be, but they have to, you know, put up with it and deal with dynamics that sometimes can be dehumanizing. And so even trying to envision the people on the bus riding behind my head as I was speaking to ensure that Jay Brody hears some different kinds of voices. Perhaps there's a bubble around him and he's only getting a perspective on this city and what can be the future and the vision of the city. And I wanted to make sure that he heard some other kinds of voices, at least through me.
And we've been talking some this week about vision, a different vision for Baltimore. And folks, like to hear your visions as we hear this conversation unfold at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 to join in on a conversation. When we look at the Baltimore Development Corporation, I mean, it appears that most of the work they do is in the Inner Harbor, newly developed areas. And what you're saying basically is the Black community is, at least the working class part of the Black community, where most people live in the city, are left out of this process. And what do you think would happen? What's the alternative vision that you have for this?
Well, the vision I have in the Another BDC is Possible group put some wonderful things out on their website as well, and I would encourage folks to check that out too. But the vision I have is one where the public participates in the vision. You know, I'm not going to sit here tonight and say, well, this is the vision for all of Baltimore,
right,
and this
right.
is what we should do. What I will say is that There needs to be more people at the table. There needs to be other voices at the table included in the discussion, and not just voices for the sake of voices, but voices with decision-making power. You know, one of the things that I think is very interesting about the Baltimore School Board is that they have a student member of the Baltimore City School Board, but that student member really doesn't have strong decision-making power on the body. It's just like a token. It's like a face, right?
Right.
And so I don't want that type of I don't want Jay Brody and others to open the door and just allow us to sit there and smile and be a part of the conversation. And then when it's time for decision-making power, we get escorted out of the door. No, it's time for other voices to be at the table with decision-making power, because the best that Jay Brody and his crew will be able to do, the best that they'll be able to do without our voices, is produce an anemic vision. Because these are people who, they have professional skills, they have things that they bring to the table, of course. But no, I'm more excited by the visions of peasants and street sweepers and poor folk and window washers than I am by the visions of those who have power and money and privilege and whose hands often are the hands who craft the future for us instead of with us.
So I'm curious, just in your conversations, what that vision would be. In other words, we talk about your neighborhood,
right,
where your church is,
right,
which is on Belvedere,
mm-hmm,
at York,
right,
and there's very different worlds between your world of on Belvedere and the world south on York,
yeah,
as opposed to what's across the street at Belvedere Square,
right.
I mean, that's the dividing line you talk about.
Exactly, and I think, you know, as I point out in the blog piece, you know, it's a stark picture, you know, and it was just something that, you know, the York Road side and the York Belvedere side of where I live, you know, it's financed. The BDC was a part that helped to finance Belvedere Square, and you got posh stores and you got high-end furniture and fine dining and healthy food. But while I pastor there and while the church is on that end, I live further south on York Road. And so when I go home from church, I got to go past Belvedere Square and go back to my community that has four liquor stores on the same block and with a food depot spot that has less than high quality food that's being sold. And so, matter of fact, the sign, when I left the open air meeting with Jay Brody, I went back home and there was a sign for a brand new business being opened up in my community. And the sign said, "Tobacco and groceries coming soon." I mean, what type of sign is that? What type of vision is that for the businesses in those parts of Baltimore where most black people live, where most poor people live? I left the skyscrapers where Jay Brody's office is and went back to liquor stores and check cashing joints.
I mean, the idea that you would advertise tobacco, which I thought was illegal. I mean,
and
not tobacco, not tobacco itself,
right,
but advertising tobacco outdoors is supposed to be illegal, I think.
Yeah, well, on the blog, it's there. So anybody, you know, you want to check that out, the picture is on there.
So, I mean, but so an alternative, folks, I want you to call in and talk about your neighborhoods at 410-319-8888. We see the high rises and the hotels popping up through downtown. Harrah's is now going to, looks like they're going to build a casino, mm-hmm, in Baltimore. As a lottery parlor. But what is the alternative vision? What's your vision of how you think your neighborhood should look, what you want it to look like? And I think that's part of the issue. How to control these food marts, these liquor stores, the tobacco selling world,
right,
inner city neighborhoods.
Yeah, and to speak to, as you said, you know, what is it? Could you think about it? If you look at the different sectors of the city, Mark, when you think about it, schools are being closed down oftentimes without a lot of public input, and so that creates outcry there. Recreation centers, they're on the chopping block, and the mayor's trying to see if there can be a deal that's worked out there.
At least 10 will close by January 1st.
And so there's public outcry there. Look, the public is crying out in every sector and system of society because decisions are being made for us instead of being made with us. And particularly tonight, as my article speaks to more so the black community, it's just, to me, it's appalling that the black community, we are the majority numerically in the city, and by and large, don't really have popular input and participation in terms of crafting vision. And somebody will say, well, we have a black mayor, and we have a black this, and we have a black that. That's nice. But I'm talking more about the common, regular, everyday folk, not so much folks who may have been groomed and invited into positions of power and prestige and money.
Let's get some callers near 410-319-8888. Get your thoughts and ideas. We want to hear what you think. Think about your neighborhoods. Think about development takes place and the tips that people get and payment in lieu of taxes, the pilots that people get to build their businesses. What do neighborhoods get? What should they get? What will we do with the corner of York and Cold Spring, let's say? which I pass by every day.
Yeah.
You know, on my way here, or I'll make a left and go up, and you'll see vast differences in the way neighborhoods look. And what do we want in our neighborhoods? 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air.
Yes, I called the other day, so I'll probably say kind of the same thing. I think, you know, as far as, I actually live in Baltimore County, but I work in Baltimore City. I spend more time in the city than I do in my actual house. And I think, you know, just really just kind of helping people have that sense of pride, I think if the corporation can put back into the community, you know, make the communities look good again. I think invest in the community centers, because I'm like, how are you going to have a harbor if you have no recreation centers? And so, you know, we need to invest back in our young people. We're not going to live forever. And if we don't equip them with anything, you know, things aren't going to improve. So I think, you know, investing in our neighborhoods, investing in our young people, and trying to maintain that sense of community. Because, you know, just like you're saying, there's some places that have four liquor stores. Well, maybe we obviously don't need them, but you have, you know, better schools. Or, like I said, the recreation centers. Or senior centers. Just whatever that particular area needs, I think, kind of cater to the need to generate, once again, that sense of community. That's my little comment.
No, it's a great comment. Thank you, Andrea. You want to?
I agree. And I think that, you know, in terms of another perspective on the call, I think I would say this, that I'm not looking for the Baltimore Development Corporation to instill pride in Black Baltimore. I'm not looking for pride. I'm looking for money. You know, that's what they deal with, money and institutions and expanding businesses. That's what they deal with. And when you talk about the York and Cold Spring or whatever area of Baltimore, that, you know, there's many of them, whether it's liquor stores or abandoned homes, whole blocks of abandoned homes or houses. And I think that when we look at them, we have to think about it in such a way and say, this is not an accident. Right. There were intentional policies that helped to create this and make this a reality. And so I agree with Glenn Ross, activist out of East Baltimore, who says that ghettos are created. They're not accidents. They didn't fall out of the sky. The specific policies helped to put them in place. And even if the people who created the policies, even if they had good intentions, the debate should not be about their intentions. Matthew chapter 7 says you shall know a tree by the fruit it bears. And so I'm not here to argue Jay Brody's intentions for Baltimore. I'm here to examine his fruit under his leadership and other similar groups like the Greater Baltimore Committee and other groups, these quasi-public-private groups who, you know, have the benefit of the contracts with the city, who get public funds, but public participation is not always there. And so I'm not here to argue intentions about Jay Brody or Don Fry or, you know, whoever. I'm here to look at their fruit, and the fruit is not healthy fruit for the majority of Baltimore's residents.
So, folks,
from my view.
No, let's get your point of view out here. 410-319-8888. And Andre, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, everybody. And
good
I
evening.
Think this is really a great subject, because this very issue has troubled me, being a lifelong resident of Baltimore City. You know, back during the mayor elections, we you know, homeowners are being oppressed with excessive amounts of property taxes. You know, you ride through the neighborhood, you got 8 to 10 cameras flashing, taking and charging you for just trying to get around in your own neighborhood. And then when you go downtown, you cross a certain line, you know, you got all these great buildings, these new businesses popping up with all this free money and tax breaks given out. But then when you ride uptown, you don't see any progress. All you see is dilapidation and continued deterioration. So I'm in 100% agreement. I don't think we should have a Baltimore Development Corporation, you know, a semi-private quad, but they spending public money. You know what I mean? That just contrary to the whole system itself. You got private decisions, but public money. And yet the majority of the citizens here in Baltimore don't have a say of the tax breaks that they're giving out. If you want to increase Baltimore City's revenue, why don't we go back and renegotiate all these tax breaks that we have out here, with all this money being left on the table and given away to these so-called developers, and then we can save some of our rec centers and build better schools. But instead of still trying to tax the poor people in Baltimore for everything and still allowing the rich to go get away with everything and still pocket our money in the exchange.
Andre, thanks for your thoughts. Kieber.
Definitely agree. I mean, it's time to, I mean, these are the type of conversations I think need to happen right at, you know, the BDC and you know, in their board meetings and in public open air meetings. It needs to happen because up to this point, it's been operating. It's been given the message, as I write about in my piece, it gives the message of just trust us. We know what's best for you. Well, I'm saying, no, I'm tired of trusting others to do what's best for the black community in Baltimore City. I mean, that game is old. That song is played out because when I look around, again, go to East Baltimore, you see gentrification in East Baltimore around Hopkins. You go, you know, to North Baltimore and see nice finance projects next to essentially ghettos and liquor depots for, you know, in the city. And so we've seen your fruit. And so at some point, I think it's a responsibility, I think, of the popular masses. I think, you know, people of color and poor folk got to come together and say, you know what, we're tired of allowing this to continue like this. We have to either get in the way, show up where we're not invited, and speak up in ways that we won't win friends. But at the end of the day, we'll together help shape a vision for this city.
I like you said, show up where we're not invited.
Yeah, we'll never be invited. you're not going to get a Christmas card or a Hanukkah card or whatever. Or Kwanzaa. No, listen, just forget about it. But when we show up, speak up and get in the way, then I think things will change.
Let's go to 410-319-8888 again. And D, you're on the air.
Mark,
welcome.
I enjoy the show so much. I listen every day.
Thank you.
Work. I just want to touch on two things. I'm a lifetime resident of Baltimore. I've been living in Baltimore all 38 years. And it is just to ride. I live in Reservoir Hill, and I go up and down North Avenue all day. And to see how North Avenue itself has deteriorated in just, I would say, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
How many abandoned homes have come about? And it is just very sad to me to see where, at one time, even though it was poor people living there, at least people lived there. It's now nothing. It's just a blank building. And, I mean, they say 70% of the abandoned homes are owned by the city. When is the mayor going to do something about it? When is she going to be proactive about getting either these homes redone or what? And my second point is, I think that the city needs year-round youth employment, not just for the summer. I mean, to me, the youth are suffering. I have two teenagers in my home, and neither really can find a substantial job where they can live. I mean, when I was 19, I made enough where I could live in an apartment. Nowadays, my son is 19, he couldn't leave home, you know? And I think a lot of times the youth, what they could be using them for is to get some of these dilapidated homes built up, even if it's just on the outside.
It has
gone to pot. Like, there's no, I don't know what, I didn't vote for Chef Stephanie Rollins Lake, but I don't know what her vision is. I don't understand where she's going with, as far as the real people of Baltimore.
Yeah, that's a great question. Hero, you can jump back into it. One of the things I thought about is, as you were talking, Dee, and you were talking a minute ago, Hero, is that, not that I would advocate this in the air, and of course I wouldn't do that, but there are lots of empty houses, and maybe that's something people should occupy. Maybe we're going to occupy, instead of occupying an island in the middle of the Harbor Place, how about occupying houses as people who live in working class neighborhoods, no plumbing, no electricity, are carpenters. Take the houses and say, okay, we're moving in, we'll fix them up, we'll make the neighborhood better.
Yeah, and I'm glad you wouldn't suggest that over the air, Mark.
I could never suggest that. But just a thought that might pop in my head.
It's a thought, and I'm so glad, because people in other cities, they are doing just that, especially right. As the weather gets colder. I mean, a way that we really can raise awareness to the challenges as it relates to homelessness and foreclosures and poverty, then go back in the house, you know, and, you know, if you can't, the thing is this, I think, if you can't get results from the approved avenues of protest, you know, show up at the meeting at such a time and write down your name, and if you're one of the 10 people, you can say something to the director. If you can't get results out of those approved, socially acceptable, responsible avenues, then I think it's the responsibility of people to dream up ways that are not the approved avenues, but the avenues that work for the people. I think that's what happened, and, you know, from the 60s to all over the world, people begin to recognize that the approved improved avenues, if they are created by the same people who are in power, will be avenues that at the end result will only create a measured level of change. But if you really want significant, substantive change, then you have to at least be brave enough to dream up other avenues of getting in the way and avenues of protest to bring about results that work for the people.
Let's hear what Nancy has to say. Nancy, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you, Mark. Great show.
Thank you.
I just want to make a comment and compare and kind of build on Dee's comment about North Avenue. A few years ago, I've been working in D.C. off and on for about the past 10 years, but there was a significant change when Anthony Williams became mayor of D.C., and he completely stopped the planned deterioration of that city. And when Dee was talking about how North Avenue has deteriorated, when Anthony Williams became mayor of D.C., he completely changed New York Avenue. I'm sure everyone remembers driving into D.C. and remembering how horrible New York Avenue was. And, you know, now when you go to D.C., it's a world-class city. I don't see any reason why those same efforts and same funds, you know, can be applied here in Baltimore.
Great.
I think we have a lot to think about in terms of how this city, what we can do in this city. There's so much. I mean, we're going to have a show on this next week about the bill that did not pass city council last week, which was to tax exempt nonprofits who want to create urban farms and living spaces in mostly inner city neighborhoods. Which to me is, we can give pilots and TIFs to the wealthiest, and you can't help feed the people of Baltimore by creating urban farms and let them be taxed free for a few years so we can actually create something that feeds the people of the city.
Yeah.
Because right now, urban farmers have to sell most of their stuff to the wealthiest restaurants to survive. We could build a different kind of system.
Yeah.
They could do that, but it can also feed the people of the city.
Yeah.
It's sometimes our priorities are amiss.
Well, and we need that type of challenge to the system, and it's unfortunate that it didn't go through, but we need that. If you think about it, Mark, you know this, you know, and many of your listeners know as well, but think about the Panthers and how they even really, you know, rose to greater popularity by addressing the everyday needs of people. You know, it was the breakfast program.
It was free clinics.
It was those type of things. And I believe that a part of the raft that they drew from J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO and others, a part of that wrath was perhaps fueled by the reality that the Black Panthers and other groups were creating a different type of system. We're saying, listen, your system don't work for us, so instead of buying your food, we're going to grow our own food. Now, what would happen if folks in Baltimore started growing their own food and started unplugging from, you know, the socially acceptable ways to get food? That food is connected to big money. That money is connected to lobbyists and politicians. And so, you know, we have to. I don't think there's anything new being said here tonight. I don't think there's anything new even that came out in the open air meeting. I think when we are students of history, when we go back and look at what has transpired before us, then we can say, oh, I've seen this movie before. And here's how things worked with those who came before me. And here, you know, how we might be able to do the same thing, contextualize it for our times, but here how we might be able to make some change where we are, addressing the same core issues.
Which is what you do.
Yeah. Try to.
And that's why these conversations, I think, have to take place more on this show. And we also have to bring in some of the political leaders to talk about, think about different creative ways that we can take hold of our communities and control them and make them grow. Not just control them, but make them grow and be places of beauty that people want to be part of.
Right. We can't expect those who maintain the current system to give us vision for the future. You know, their job is to maintain and to manage what is. I think it's the job of the people to dream up, talk up, and protest up a vision for the future that works for all of us.
Reverend Heber Brown, now on your sign, I always forget this, you don't call yourself pastor of the church.
Well, I'm pastor, but also servant leader.
I serve
a beautiful congregation of people at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and I thank God for them.
And that's what it says on the piece outside the church, leader, which I like.
Yes, sir.
So servant leader, Reverend Heber Brown of the Pleasant Hope Baptist Church over on Belvedere. And we're going to link to faithinactiononline.com. You can read the piece, and we'll continue getting Heber here as much as he possibly can. Stay with us. We'll be back. We're going to hear from the incredible Walter Moseley and Catherine Tumber during the course of the next hour, so stay with us.